Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
Show, they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed. Ha. We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Black woman, black out, all black everything, black woman, black hips, black kiss. Black lips, yeah. Afro with a black okay. Dick. Love when you talk that black ish. Black man, black fist, yeah. Black gat, black grip, yeah. Backlash on the black okay. Lip. Still gon' talk that black ish. Black man, black land, black people, black land. Cash changed only black hands. Black businesses, black men, black banks, black dollars, black schools, black scholars, black doctors, black lawyers, black inventors, black farmers, black salons, black parlors, black designers, black garments, black stage, black performance, black panel, black audience, black mother, black father, black son, black daughter, black love, black honor, black today, black tomorrow, black woman, black hip, black kiss, black lip, afro with a black pick. Love when you talk that black dick. Black man, black fist, black gat, black grip, backlash on the black lip. Still gon' talk that black dick. Black God, black teeth, black face, black features, black race, black people, black face, black eat, black leather, black beret, black shotgun, black AKs, black solutions, black answers, black power, black panthers, black God, black Jesus, black face, black features, black race, black people, black face, black eat, black leather, black beret, black shotgun, black AKs, black solutions, black answers, black power, black panthers, black woman, black hip, black kiss, black lip, afro with a black pick. Love when you talk that black dick. Black man, black fist, black gat, black grip, backlash on the black lip. Still gon' talk that black dish. Black man, black plan, black people, black land, cash and change, only black hands, black business, black man, black bank, black dollar, black school, black scholar, black doctor, black lawyer, black inventor, black farmer, black salon, black parlor, black designer, black garment, black stage, black appointment, black panel, black audience, black mother, black father, black sons, black daughters, black love, black honor, black today, black tomorrow, black woman, black hair, black kiss, black lip, afro with a black pick. Love when you talk that black dick. Black man, black fist, black gat, black grip, backlash on the black dick. Still gonna talk that black dick.
I first learned to crawl, then the walk I was running. Then I got older, started planning to run it. Hung around my OGs, they would mold me to run it. Then I got cocky, had a couple of running. Did a small bit, but learned mad wisdom from it. Got my mind right, now it's my time to run it. To the finish line, it's success where I'm running. To make sure that my daughter's after me, gon' run it. Running from the past to a higher state of mind. Running from the police, ain't got time to do no time. Running from these fakers, since they game be so see-through. And running to that money like I'm running from the people. Running like I'm in a car race just to get it. Running like I'm late, no time to waste, I'm trying to get there. Running like I'm about to save my people when I get there. And do it like a king, ain't never did it when I get there. Cause I'm running, running, running to success. You know you supposed to be eating off your talents. Running, running, it ain't no stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, I'm running, I want what's mine. You can have what you want if you focus your mind. I'm running, and I ain't stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. Running from the media and these lies that they feed us. Fingers to the government and this fake food they feed us. Turn you to a consumer with these messages they feed ya. Keep you disinformed with these messages they feed us. Cancer and disease from this food that they feed ya. Billions on healthcare from this food that they feed us. Kill us but when it's time for war then y'all need us. Medical experiment with live human feeders. So now I suggest that you lace up a runner. Go learn your history, who is I trying to run it? Look at our history and see how we used to run it. That's why they kept us down because they know we're running. But now we're getting smarter, we about to take over. They call it the end of the world, we call it the takeover. Running cause you realize this world belongs to us. And running like some kings and queens and warriors. Cause I'm running, running, running to success. You know you're supposed to be eating off your talents. Running, running, there ain't no stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, I'm running, I want what's mine. You can have what you want if you focus your mind. I'm running, I'm running, and I ain't stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, running, running to success. You know you supposed to be eating off your talents. Running, running, it ain't no stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. I'm running, I'm running, I want what's mine. You can have what you want if you focus your mind. I'm running, I'm running, and I ain't stopping. I'm so out of breath, it sound like I'm beatboxing. Running.
Till I get free. Till I get free. I'll keep running. Get free. Feel like it's free. I'll keep keep running. Till I get free.
He called for the unity and the redemption of the African world.
Salute them, honorable Marcus
Garvey. We were not ready to listen then.
They might not have been ready then.
There's wonder whether we are ready.
Ain't no doubt about it.
To listen.
We ready, baby.
Now.
Let's go. Yeah, 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 yeah.
A flag fly high.
Woo!
Flag.
Forever, God, they would never die. On my 90, the throne ready, let's take a ride. Tech, walk, big men don't choose a side. This is the path for the warriors. Seldom travel, yet still vainglorious. Black power represents us. You either rolling with Africa or against us.
To the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense nightly broadcast. Tonight, brothers and sisters, as usual, promises to not be only thought-provoking, but it will definitely be informational. I am your host tonight, Sister Crystal Muhammad. We are coming to you live in the belly of the beast in the Mary KKK, sending a shout-out to all the people in the many countries of the mother continent of Africa that are listening tonight, as it is definitely late night, yet you continue to support our broadcast on a nightly basis, and we give you a salute and indeed a thanks. To all our people listening in the Caribbean islands, in South America, in Central America, in the UK, Canada, all across the globe, we send you a salute of Black Power. And last but certainly not least, to all of our beautiful, beautiful brothers and sisters here in United States of America who support this broadcast, we give you a Black Power salute. As you know, Tuesday nights are normally hosted by our special guest host, Brother Tutmose Sankara, who will not be available tonight. He's dealing with a very special family situation, but what he did to make sure that he doesn't miss a beat was sending an audio. This audio comes from an interview he did on Brother Knowledge Born show entitled Do the Knowledge. So without any further ado, I'm going to play this clip from Brother Tutmose Sankara. This clip is about 44 minutes, so it will definitely take us into the 8 o'clock hour Central, 9 o'clock hour Eastern, and that would be the 6 o'clock hour on the Pacific Coast. So what we will have after that is a clip from our great elders and some information from brothers and sisters who are doing the work on the continent. So without further ado, I'm going to play this interview of Brother Tutmose Sankara doing the Al Kibalon News Report on Brother Knowledge Born's program, Do the Knowledge, and then we'll play some clips, and tomorrow night we'll come back into the program. Black Power.
Peace and my God, and welcome to another episode of New Knowledge Radio, a place where knowledge is born. This is your host, Knowledge Born Alive. We are here for one of my favorite segments. This is a long-awaited, highly anticipated sit-down with one of my heroes that are here on this side with the backdrop of one of our greatest heroes in the background, one of our patron saints of insurrection, of African correctness, and also an African example. Two shiny ball heads to glow from one generation to the next, you understand? So it's my esteemed honor and privilege at this time to represent my bigger brother and comrade, you know, one who guides me and keeps me on that straight and narrow path towards African revolution. Chairman, so many titles, you understand what I'm saying? So we're going to get into them and have an understanding of what they are, but a chief organizer, an organizer's organizer, one who continues to bring African people together across generations, from the ancestors to our youth. So my brother and warrior comrade, Tutmose Sankara.
Peace and power, African family. Thank you for bringing me on, bro. And salute to the Doula Knowledge family and your consistency in making my comrade brother's work as fruitful and consistent as it is. How many shows now?
2,500.
2,500. Keep doing the work, bro. Appreciate you.
So we're here today, man. We'll chop it up a little bit. You know, we see you move, but we don't really know the story. And through Knowledge Radio, we focus on the story behind the story. We see the man, like we see the man here, but many people who walk with Doc or claim they walk with Doc ain't know the story. So we're going to get into your story a little bit today, and I wanted to deal with it from a perspective of organizing a new African proper propaganda campaign. So from your roots in time as an organizer, for those organizers who are looking to get into this work, what would you say is few things that stick out as some of your greatest challenges as an organizer of African people?
Number one, I think in the beginning, committing one to consistent study and work. I think that thing, because that's what you come across, right? People who think they know what they're talking about, but they really don't. And they'll listen to people who really know what they're talking about, and you'll see their eyes gloss over, and they'll see that light of knowledge and wisdom that comes from someone else, but they won't commit themselves to that study consistently. And so for me, not only for myself, but for that I see for others throughout the movement, that consistency, you ain't gonna get it off you too. We don't understand the thought process that goes through when you read those words on a page. It allows your own imagination to create those images and not the images that are given to you by someone else, and so that our own African mind is able to work with that. That's number one. Number two, you say like from an organ, so that's from a personal level. Organizationally, infiltration and incorrect thinking, which leads to disunity. So kind of disunity, but disunity is broad. Infiltration of organizations by those who sometimes unpurposefully and then a lot of times purposefully introduce statements, demonstrations, things that bring about disunity in a collective of people that have gathered themselves for a particular purpose. I've seen it in, you know, so many situations. I've had it happen personally, you know, with people around me, and we've seen in history that that's led to the death of not only individuals in the revolutionary struggle, but whole movements themselves based upon that FBI and other intelligence agencies, infiltration of not only diaspora within the United States, but also continental revolutionary organizations. So infiltration of organizations. Another thing I think is on an operational level, as revolutionaries, as you mentioned before, like propaganda, not finding the correct means of strategic in a specific time period. While you and I, some of y'all were on earlier, but I had mentioned Dr. King, and people not understanding that nonviolent struggle is a part of a revolutionary struggle, because every revolutionary struggle goes through that phase. We're reading the history, but I think that white supremacy in the United States has us so shook that we understand where we are, we're not walking those steps scientifically the way that we should. Like, take after last year, then the big conflagration of demonstration across the nation. What cogent organization came out of those struggles that is consisting of a African-centered consciousness, and that is continuing to this day, that we can say was built out of that energy that was built up out of African people. So these strategic errors, that's what I'm saying, like, that because when you try to explain them, because the elders always know the answer, right? They like, hey, well, we need to do this and organize this, why is going on, blah, 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 blah. And then you get, you know, a certain percentage, maybe a few or whatever, of the people to be involved in struggle, but that is the recruitment of people into the struggle. Right. Becomes, I think that is the one consistent generational frustration of the revolutionary, converting the unconscious to consciousness. Brother Kwame Ture says, and that struggle, and like I said, the strategies. I just think that we haven't employed the proper ones. Think about them. It was house to house, street to street, block to block, asking people, no. Right. So you know, and so that that recruitment phase, that infiltration that occurs within, and then just that study to come to the proper understanding of who we are as an African people, and to give that God conscious, that strikening of consciousness that occurs within the African when that melanin is activated through that knowledge and that ancestral wisdom.
That leads me to my next question, like perfectly, you know, the perfect segue guy already. Organizing in regards to freeing political prisoners. I want to ask him specific, you know, we all shared space with him together. What was it like for you? And, you know, kind of give a little of the backstory working to free Baba
Sekou
Dinga, and so many others.
Baba Sekou, you just, you know, Sekou Dinga, you just have to understand, right? So you have the Panda 21 situation, right? The pig vamp. And so they catch everybody, and they come and get Sekou, Sekou, Sekou. When they knock on the door, he caught the M1 behind there and said, "Who is it?" He said, the police say, "Hold on, give me a minute, put my clothes on." And he got down, went down the pipe out of that compartment, right? When he looked up again, Sekou was in Cuba. So that would be a victorious story, right? But that ain't where it is. He went from Cuba to Algeria, where he worked in the international office of the Black Panther Party. They're training African revolutionaries on the continent in these insurgency tactics and things and stuff that he had learned from Cubans and, you know, other revolutionary formations that he went to. I mean, this guy hits all the way back. Another pivotal figure. Talk about Sekou Odinga. If you study another figure from revolutionary history called Lumumba Shakur, the big brother of Zaire Shakur, who was killed in a shootout on New Jersey Turnpike when Asada was shot and Sunyata went to prison. But so Sekou goes to Algeria. He's training revolutionaries in Africa. And then he hears that Auntie Asada's captured and she's in the hospital. This Tula woman from America, you know, on the continent, like, okay, I'll be back. He comes back into the country as a wanted man. And he and Matulu, with other comrades, carry out the liberation of Auntie Asada. So that is the type of figure that, so he goes from being the domestic revolutionary and fugitive to international, then back to domestic. So learning. But the greatest influence of just working with him was from the origin, his queen. Because that's my partner. Everybody be like, when they come, right, everybody running Sekou and I'm running her because, like, we worked together to liberate him. Me, I participated in campaigns, Jericho Movement, hosted events in his honor. And one of my first political prisoner hip-hop concerts. I had the, you know, Sekou and all of them up there, him and Imam Jamil and Jaleel Muhtar King and all of them, and then Jaleel Muhtar King, that's another one, you know. But with Sister Dequee, that I saw that sister strength bring that man out. It was one of the most incredible things. I mean, the strategic way that it happened. He wasn't supposed to come home because the feds had him first, they turned him over to the state gave him time, did all the time, then the feds tried to come back, but you couldn't. So they had to let him go. So even strategically how he came home, legal wise, was miraculous. But the energy of that sister, I mean, I still have lives and stuff. I mean, shout out to Brother Kalonji. we would host things and bring, you know, I had an all-female political prisoner panel in 2016-15, right before he came home too, where Mama Dequee, Pam Africa, Terry Thompson, Baba Mutulu's lawyer, Eugene Conway, ex-Black Panther sister, you know, and so, like, knowing and being a part of the liberation campaign and then seeing the political prisoner come home is, like, I think it's kind of different for me, for being someone who's kind of, you know, on a smaller scale in that position, having been under attack by the feds and come home to, and then seeing him and then that prisoner to prisoner bond developing through that revolutionary struggle. It's different. You can be revolutionary, you can be on the street, you can be an organization, there's that bond. Then there's the bond between those who've been behind enemy lines. And so we say, cool, now it just was like, straight to the work. Hey, man, you know about Barranza? Yeah, I was in with Barranza. What's going on with him? Hey, look, I'm going to put you on the line. He's full, call it a day. Boom, straight. Me and St. Cook, straight into the work. So he came home, just like that. And he ain't stopped. I was just in New York in July at the National African Arts Festival in Brooklyn. Me and him had a political prisoner day working together. Me and him, you know, Sister Yaya Juan Zinga. Shout out to the Conrad Sistren. Right? At the table. Oh, my God. Bro, this is the same as, like, the kid. It's actually better than I would ever. I would imagine that, like, it would be so much strife and turmoil because you read all the stories of what happened before you think that. And I know some things, you know what I mean? But overall, it's so liberating mentally to know that you participated in an aspect, in this little small aspect of history that has to do with these great people that we all have admired and give energy and love and honor to and represent for all time, the liberation struggle of African people. Yeah, shout out to Brother Sekou. He still, because like, you know, his rhythm, you know, like you said, me, I'm persistent. Man, say, who'll call that phone 2:30 at night, man? You know, there's some people, they have that energy that will not let them stop struggling until they take their last breath, you know, until they can't do it anymore. You know, and that's, and I find that consistently in those who have been at that final struggle like that. Like I said, Baba Jalil Musa King just came home, organized the whole spirit of the Mandela Tribunal. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to him. Comrade Eddie Conway, the move comrades who come home, and each one of them, when one came home, they turned around and struggled to get the next one, the next one, they turned around and struggled to get the next one, so all of them was home, except Mumia. And we're still struggling to get Mumia home. So, the work of political prisoners is one of the only things you can do as an organizer in the United States that actually connects you to being a part of a nation. Think about it, right? We could say that we're some government in exile or something. We can make that up, make some offices or something, right? That's easy, right? But what action could you carry out? You could form yourself, right? But what actual actions could you carry out that represent you being a nation? You say that flag is what you stand under? And the ones who are in that prison, that you're coming to get them with arms?
Then you're a nation. The rest of you are just talking.
Or survival. You know, survival. You gotta eat. You gotta have somewhere to live. Children gotta have some education. You know what I mean? So that's just a vital. It doesn't make you a nation. Right? Armed confrontation under a flag, by definition of the UN, makes you a nation. You declare that and say, we are the new African nation. those are our comrades, they are prisoners of war, you're holding them, and we're at war with you. Fighting for political prisoners is one of the only things you can do that actually makes you stand up under the banner of an actionable nation.
Before I go to my next question, I gotta ask, how did you hook up with Bob Mukasa?
In those early days when I came to Atlanta, I would see him around at events, but something happened in like 2002, 2003. He was assaulted by the Clark Atlanta police. At the AU. And I believe that, Morehouse, the campus police, right? And so, I was so, I mean, they like, oh man, they just like, all of this was stretched, torn, you know what I mean? So, we organized ourselves and, you know, we had some direct action. And so after that, we began to have personal consultations. And at that point, I think that because there was a time, of course, I was in the New Black Panther Party. I think that he was just, you know, it was like a feeling out period, you know, during that time. And then after I left the party and joined WADU in 2004, then we started working together every day. It was like that. And that worked like, okay. Got to work with Dr. Collins for 3 months. He made me his minister of education. Dealing with, through him, Cynthia McKinney, a lot of the figures through Abba Muhammad, you know, a lot of figures through the Revolutionary Project. But when I came to WADU, didn't meet the Pan-African elders, that was a whole other level. That's when me and I got tight with Mukasa. You know, there was Dale Jones, there was James Smalls, there was Jeffries, internationally, there was Dudley Thompson, you know, Lombe Bros, one of the greatest ever, you know, the, like, now we international, you know. But the experience with the Cubans before coming back to Atlanta really kind of, it was like just coming back. Now the education is being added to the action that I had the opportunity to participate in before, because I didn't know what the hell I was. I didn't know. You know what I mean? It's just like some you think about, like, yeah, I can brag about it later on. But when you know what you're going through, you ain't know what the hell's going on. You know, it's just something that happened, and you just was adventurous enough to participate in it. And then after it was over, and you were scared all the way through it. And then they know you could say, yeah, out there. No, you know what I'm saying? No, you know what I'm saying? You shake your knees, you shake it all the way. But the decision to do it was what was important, because it could have been just an adventure or one-time thing, but to follow it up now, later on, to connect with the Pan-African elders, now I understand, okay, that wasn't just an adventure or something. Well, I was following up in the tradition of these revolutionaries. First of all, I'm working with Fidel and these guys. Now I'm sitting over here at the table, like Ivan Big Broff is at my house, sitting here eating with me and my wife and my children. And he was talking to me about when he was with Patrice, right? So at a certain point, it becomes necessary to record these things and have some type of compendium where no matter what happens, the next generation has access to this information. And so that was one of the main things that I needed to do in regards to, like I said, the political prisoners being that one portfolio, and it being that very important portfolio that one, through actionable, you know, through planned action, can actually make you a nation. but still being only one portfolio, and the rest of these having to be organized. Repatriation and dual citizenship, business connections to the continent, organizing the diaspora and the other far-flung African communities together, Funas and Belize and Jamaican Maroons and the Palenques in Brazil. All of this is covered under the office of the African Union's chair of the diaspora. So I had to think of a way to be able to disperse information on all these portfolios in this office through one name, through one stream. And I had spent this time building a platform based upon that through events, through the position in WRFG 89.3 as the basically political prisoner or reporter, but that needed to be expanded upon. And so I had to, it was necessary for a few reasons. Number one, something was inside of me, because the political prisoner aspect, I realized because of my personal experience with it, was something that I leaned on more heavily than the other portfolios that I was responsible for. So I had to, and it took, you know, and the elders, you know, they don't mind, James Smart, you know, by Mukasa, like I said, once again, the brother never learned one. Brother Africa, I'm going to need you to get things together. I'm going to have to start traveling and see if you need any different places. Where these Africans at, man? Propaganda, put it in place and liberate these African territories. James Small is different. What's wrong with you? See, what happened is, you keep talking about jail. And 10 years, you ain't gonna think about this. If you fight a war and you got an objective and you go into it and your left flank get caught, right? But the main interior of the army keep moving forward to the objective. Do you stop going to the objective because the left flank got cut off? That's war. That's battle, you know. So that was a major part of why I, you know, within myself had to. But at the same time, I wanted to do it right. I wanted to do it proper. And that took me just battening down the hatches and mostly seeing in what arenas I would apply my energy, you know, because basically I'm transitioning out of the radio into the video phase of me.
So what's some of the things that we can look for since we're right there in store with our Keep in Line News? Like, what are some of the goals, aims, objectives, the missions? Like, what are some of the things people can look forward to? And kind of give us a little bit of back, because you had a couple of shows.
So what I have been wanting to do was basically set the tone. And the tone for Al Kibalon News is, my elder, Dale Jones, his name was the war correspondent. And so when I was doing radio early, just doing spot shows, just like recording things, you know, so early in 2006, 2007, He said, you let the combat report up. Because you been to Cuba, you know, you went over there to Angola with him, and you know, you tell me to go back and tell you. He was the one who influenced me to start writing the book, too, Al Kibalon Redemption. And so, for me, it was just, I needed, you know how there's always something inside of you, you have to get straight and within your own mind and spirit before you can carry out the act. And so Kibalon News was something that I needed to do in order to get things straight in my mind, where I could say to myself, okay, Tud, you got the one place where no matter what happens, all of this information that's come from, all this stuff you remember that you can't get, that you spotting on the top of your head, just have this place where you can just dump all of this stuff at and just store it all there and just record every day, you know, get the different topics out, you know, even down here where we at, books in the closet, books and stuff everywhere. So just start working, just put it down, not only in that form, start producing the books. Finish the Akiva Live Redemption, the novel. Go into the space where the political ideology that's been laid forth already through Garvey and Nkrumah and Cabral and everybody, that you're just taking and just add the modern technological tools that we have now to that philosophy. You know, going to your little elders phase, you know, you ain't a spring chicken no more. You know, but this news organ will give me the opportunity to, as it grows into this professionally polished, African-centered news show based upon conflict of African people in the diaspora and in the continent. Give you the combat news, the combat reporter, by the time most of the part, Al Cubanar News, bringing you the news from such and such and such and such place where African people are from. And so that is in conjunction with that office of the chair of the African Union. And so I can fulfill those duties through that one station, including the propaganda, including the news and information, and then also providing through behind-the-scenes investigative reporting. Soon I'll be pushing the fund for the establishment of Al-Kibra News, because in order to be a truly professionally polished, it's like being the African-centric Al Jazeera. It's Brother Tadmos on location. You know, it's Abu Anu. You know what I'm talking about? Like that. Professional, polished, secured, diplomatic status through the office in all these places, bringing this information. That's the Al-Kibra News.
Okay. So I wanted to back up, because I thought you would think that I forgot, but I didn't.
I know you.
I wanted to get to your stations, your positions.
Okay.
Not necessarily your duties and responsibilities, because we're not getting into that. But
right.
Like the mind frame, the backstory, and then like kind of, you know, walk us through how you felt receiving, you know, the particular post position. You see what I'm saying? Take that thing.
That kind of goes back, because in college, I'll say, we'll just go back that far. There's the tradition of being born as a Seminole in Florida under my people. And that training as a young man and being sent into the world. But, you know, organizationally, among the masses of African people in the United States, Black Student Union, in college, not for college, vice president, sister was president. And then the New Black Panther Party. And that was something I chased, because I had always chased Malcolm's legacy. And I saw Dr. Collins as being the closest thing to it. And so when I found him, it was so, it was like you chase something all your life and it's taken away from you. So I was there with him, and then 3 months later he was gone. And so, but being consistent in the organization, rising up through the ranks, being the chair of Atlanta's office for 2 years, and all of the, I mean, imagine being the chair of the New Black Panther Party in the city where Dr. Collins died. Oh, was some strange stuff, man. People, you know, Sister Cynthia McKinney, Steve Coakley, you know, there's another sister from WRFG, man, I can't think of her name right now, but she was real solid too. She was real tight with Dr. Collins, you know, lawyer comrade out of New York, from the United African Movement. to have Dr. Collins up there all the time. The lawyer brother.
The warrior lawyer.
The warrior lawyer.
Automatic.
These comrades were very pivotal at that time because there was just a lot of confusion. I didn't know what was going on. Yusuf Shabazz and Savannah. So that was kind of my first introduction into just like, you know, the storm. You know, and it really got to a point where it was like, bro, walk around out here in the open with this gun and know I got this felony on me is not going to get me where I want to get to. It make me feel good because I like daring the cracker and stuff, but you got to be a little smarter, bro. So that transition handed over to the sister. I mean, it's just the first year. So yeah, I know what I mean. It's just the first year. First time in Black Panther Park. It was Nisa Shabazz, 2004. And moved into that position in the African Union, which at that time was, it was not WADU, it was something else. It was a committee within the community institutions and the African organization, CEDAW of the African Union. Then in 2004, after the meeting of intellectuals, in Senegal, Inambe Brough worked with the African Union to draft representation for the two seats in parliament that were for African people outside of the continent. Mm-hmm. And that is what WADU was born out of. And so that work and being introduced to that on that intellectual level not only kind of just made me mature and get out of that rah-rah-rah militant phase, but it really birthed that organizing mind that it has become more of a consistent aspect of my consciousness than, you know, that militancy, even though I'm still that, right? Just to organize it. If you can't be that if you can't organize it. You got to put the cup on, you know what I'm saying? Just like, you know, it just makes sense. So, but working in that, the being the going through the ranks of the New Black Panther Party, becoming chair, going through the ranks of WADU, from being political commissioner to secretary general and now chair of the region, also WRG, that position was coming into the tradition of a revolutionary sister, Sister Courage, Mama Elghani, who transitioned during the time I was in the feds. And when I came home, my comrade, Sister Sharice Nicole, was holding down the post, her and Buddy Folks, and then I slid in with them. And then we just rolled from there. Sharice Nicole ended up going to another platform within WRG, and me and Buddy Folk. Now I'm brought in the comrade Quay Cool, and then we just rolled from there. So that was the establishment of that media personality of Tutmosis Sankara, the combat reporter, African Family State Vigilant, through WRFG. That, but before then had already been Tutmosis, the New Black Panther Party chairman, and then the African Union at that time, political commissioner and secretary general. And then I came to prison sentence, and then after that, the radio work, right? And then the activism in political prison, which created, you know, so there's the radio journalist, Tutmosis Sankara. Then there's the active political prisoner, activist Tutmosis Sankara, you know, who's done stuff with Malcolm X grassroots over Tulu, does stuff with J. Madam Jamil, Veronica Bowers, Kamal Siddiqui, the MOVE organization, all of it, right? So those balancing those organizing veins, it came to a point where the feeling of elation of doing it was overcome by a
sense of wanting some feeling of completeness to it. And so with the prisoner thing, it was the encapsulation of the spirit of Mandela Tribunal this year, where afterwards, after we charged the United States with genocide, and the UN concurred with us over the imprisonment of political prisoners and mass incarceration of poor and oppressed people in general, and the genocide of African people by police in the United States. Now it's time to bring all those political prisoners from the African liberation struggle cases together into a mass action struggle, a mass class action struggle on the human rights level, and a mass action struggle on the revolutionary level. If New Africa is going to take that step that it needs to take as a revolutionary community. So being in that position to see that from those perspectives, being with Dr. Khaled, having a chance to work with Dr. Jeffries, being in Ethiopia, sitting at the African Union table, having taken private flights with the Zimbabweans, with the military and all this stuff, working with the Cubans, training with them, traveling with them, saying, look, these things, just, you would think like, oh man, I'm gonna do all of that. But just remember, the feds are watching, and there's some prison come with that too. All that fun stuff, there's some prison in there too. So you gotta take the good with the bad. So you know, I've been blessed to have comrades, shout out to Chokwe Lumumba, Sister Terry Thompson, Imhotep, Kibalan, Mowuli Davis, African legal staffs who have brought liberation when I was under attack of the enemy, and it was only through that very focused work that a comrade was able to come back home. And so that all of those, that roller coaster and all the, and those titles, like, at this point in my life, I gotta make some sense of that and find a way for all of those things to crystallize.
Last question.
Mm-hmm.
How did it feel, or just to think about this for a second,
mm-hmm.
and as I drop this, I know your face is gonna turn into something. How did it feel to go from reading George Jackson, Comrade George, to being George Jackson and not dying?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God, if you know how close. But I gotta say this. George, what George meant physically inside, I represent organizationally outside. And so that's the feeling, is he got this. This gonna sound crazy to you. He got the easy route. You know the guilt? So like, for me, the when, just like I just lost Harun, I just lost Malik Killiam, for when you're organizing and you have these responsibilities, it becomes a thing where the responsibilities overcome the pain and struggle that they have to go through. And if somebody get out of it quickly, right, then they got away. They did what they had to do and go on. If your ass is left back here, to keep carrying it over and over and over and over. So for me, it's like, man, please. The Mukasa put it the best way. He say, African, we wake up in the morning, and you know you still there, and you got to get out here among these people in struggle. Then some people may feel like that because they know they don't want to do the job. that it is a bad day, but it's always a good day for us because we know that we got another chance to bring about that victory. And it always is there in that next day. And George did something that George was, it's like, when I think of George, I think of, this might sound crazy, but when I think of George, I think of Fidel. Well, I think of the time of Fidel, right? And not like Fidel was actually there, but like the time of the shootings. Because George and the Black Panther Party inspired the Cubans anyway. The Cubans were always inspired by us because they wanted to know how we could be so strong and brave in the midst of the enemy that they couldn't even overcome outside of it, right? How does Carlos hijack the airplane and land it in Cuba, right? And what was the technical way that he did it? After the United States have to understand that we've come from a strong warrior tradition. And it's only in the last couple of decades that we have lost that consistent warrior tradition. And the mere fact that we lost control of the raising of our young men has a large thing to do with it. But also a large thing to do with it is the fact that organizationally, as I always said, we try to do things that gonna bring us grandiose ideas or some monetary gain. We'll link our consciousness to the vending and all that. And we just need to concentrate on the children. Whatever the positive, it's easier to build strong children than it is to repair broken adults.
Black power, black power, black power. That was a clip of Brother Tutmos and Carver that he sent in of an interview that he did earlier this week with Knowledge of Luda Knowledge Radio. So what we're getting ready to do now, brothers and sisters, we're going to play a clip of Dr. Eric Connor, former U.S. ambassador for the diaspora of the diaspora, who is now a very vocal, very strategic fighter for our movement, while the diaspora, not only internationally, but strategically, as well as a lot of power moves taking place behind the scenes that Dr. Arikana and her team, which consists of the brothers and sisters who have our best interests at heart in the diaspora as well as in Africa. So what she is going to do, this clip I'm going to play actually is a clip of Dr. Arikana giving a presentation before the United Nations when she was still the ambassador, and this clip is very timely. Black power.
So it's beautiful to listen to our children talk about the African Union, the model African Union. But I ask you children to take it a little bit further. It doesn't end with just a conversation about corruption in Africa. The bigger corruption in Africa is coming from outside. Try flying low over the DRC. You're going to see tarmacs in the middle of the jungle. You're going to see 747s flying into the DRC, picking up minerals and flying right outside the country. Do you think those multinationals are going to want to see peace in the DRC? Do you think they're going to want to see peace in South Sudan? No. A stable Africa is an Africa that cannot be exploited. So they will see to it that there will never be peace in Africa by any means necessary unless you come to the table and do something about it. For a continent that doesn't have a single gun manufacturing company, we simply have endless supply of guns. How? How is this okay that Africa continues to be exploited to this extent? How is it okay that the world has watched as France is taking cold, hard cash out of Africa? How is this okay? I want to know. United Nations answer that? Secretary General Guterres answer that? When you all meet every year in New York, what are you talking about? That is our reality as black people. And only we can change that. Yes. I am very encouraged by the president of Benin. He has put in a formal request for all the bank reserves his country has deposited with France. Yes. So to France I say, we are watching you, France. There better not be a coup in Benin, because that is your modus operandi. There better not be any instability in Benin, because that is your modus operandi. I'm hoping that the rest of the West African countries, quote-unquote, former French colonies, can also demand a refund of their deposits. Africa is on the move. Let's join hands. Let's support those countries in what they have started. And since I'm standing here in a historical black college, that education and understanding is start with you, our youth. This is a fight that I know very well that we will not be able to finish. But golly, we want to make sure that you understand fully what is going on. So when we pass the baton, you understand the issues. No more shall we continue to be ignorant. Our eyes are open. We know our Africa. We are going to reconnect with our roots. African Americans, you must understand there is a void that is deep in each and everyone's subconscious. It is a void that affects everything you do. First, you must understand you have that void. In this country, with the exception of the American Indians, everybody is a foreigner. And everybody has their roots outside the United States. And the rest of the races are connected to their roots, with the exception of the African Americans. You're too busy running away from your roots. You're busy denying who you are. Well, guess what? It is what it is. You are an African. And Africa is home. And the sooner you wake up and realize and accept that Africa is home, the sooner you are going to fill that void. For as long as that voice is in you, you're always going to be like a ship without an anchor. The wind blows this way, here you go. The wind blows the other way, here we go. Find your base. Go home. Africa is where you belong. And Africa is where your roots are. Thank you. But as I began to make a diagnosis, I analyzed the situation, and my final assessment was that the ignorance that the world has about Africa is the disease that I must fight. So I set out to have a plan, and I began implementation. Because it is only when that disease is treated, it is only then and only then can we embark on a true healing path for Africa and her children. I'm going to ask you one question. If I were to ask you right now, all of you, what color is the devil? I want you to answer that question to yourself. And I'm going to pause for 2 seconds. Let me guess. Most of you said black, didn't you? Then I'm going to ask you another question. What color are the angels? Let me guess. Most of you said white. Who has seen either? And yet we accept it. So you take a group of people. You say the color black is associated with the devil. Everything bad is black. You wear black to go to funerals. The villains in the movies are black. Everything undesirable is black. You take a group of people and say, you too are black. No matter how we try as black mothers, to raise our children at home and tell them you're black and you're beautiful. The minute they step foot outside that door, they are immersed in nothing but negativity about that which they represent. How do you raise a child with good self-esteem in such a world? Then I took it back a step further. So growing up in my village in Zimbabwe, the British did not come to Zimbabwe until 1896. Prior to that, we had our own gods that we worshipped. We had spirit mediums who were our intermediaries to the higher power. They had no color until the British arrived. Then the British began to, you can remember the missionaries were sent to Africa to teach us how to read, but not how to reason. So we're programmed to receive that which they wanted us to receive. And so one of the things they taught us was the issue of black and white. Remember, like 1896, in my country, we did not have those colors. And I was not referred to as black. I was African. But somehow we were just told that you're black. And then the other race is white. And then the other race, you take white color. You say white is pure. The angels are white. You wear white to go to weddings. You wear white for christening. And then you take another group of people and say, you're white. So the children are raised that you're beautiful. Everything that you represent is perfect. And when they step outside the door, the world validates what they are being told at home. Now you take these two children. One is surrounded by nothing but negativity about that which they represent. The other is surrounded by nothing but positivity about that which they represent. How do you expect these children to look at themselves as equal? These are some of the subliminal messages that are being passed on to our children. And in my own assessment, and when you look at it from the African point of view, it explains why some of our leaders, people who are supposed to represent us, when they sit across the table with others who don't look like them, they automatically feel inferior. It is a serious problem. It affects our ability to feed our children as mothers. It affects our ability to provide for our children to go to school, provide good healthcare systems, provide good infrastructure. It starts right there. The failure to stand up and defend that which you believe in and defend that which is blatantly wrong. 1884, after the colonizers had been running around our continent of Africa, they wondered how they were going to defeat these people. You see, you got to understand, before the Greek civilization, before the Roman Empire, there was Africa. The pyramids were built 2,500 years before the Greek civilization. Have you ever wondered why the Greek philosophers, the mathematicians, where were they sent for training, for education, for retraining? They were sent to Africa. Why were they sent to Africa? Because civilization as we know it began in Africa. Civilization was in Africa before they had it in Europe. You see, the history books choose to begin history from here going forward. What they don't tell you is that even the English language is based on the Yoruba language. Humanity as we know it began in Africa. Without the African, there would not be any other races. Yes. It's just a simple fact. So they came together and set out a plan. Prior prior to 1884, you got to remember, Africa was made up of powerful kingdoms. The countries that we know as African countries today did not exist. So if you're going to be doing your DNA testing, I urge you, don't settle for I'm from Nigeria. Settle for what is my kingdom. She said, I'm a proud member of the Mona Mutapa kingdom. Are you an Ashanti? Are you from the Benin kingdom? That's who we were before the Berlin conference. So why did they meet in 1884? At the invitation of the then Chancellor of Germany, Bismarck. Bismarck said, let's all come together. We, the colonizers. Because keep in mind, at that time, they were beginning to fight each other over how to distribute what they had looted from the Africans. So you see, the French would loot from the Africans, then the British would come and then loot from the French, while the French had looted from the Africans, and then the Belgians would come, they would loot from the British, while the British looted from the French, then the French looted from the Africans. They were getting ready to have a European war on the African soil. So Bismarck called his sidekick, the then King of Belgium, and said, let's meet in Berlin. Let's strategize on how we can effectively loot from the Africans in a unified way that does not lead us into a war. So they met in Berlin to strategize on how to see to it that Africa and her children are forever defeated and dominated. Make no mistake about that. I repeat, they met in Berlin from November of 1884 to February of 1885 to strategize on how to effectively see to it that Africa and her children are forever defeated and dominated. That was 135 years ago. Fast forward 2019, the strategy remains in place today. History tells us that they set across from big old map of Africa. They proceeded to chop Africa up into tiny little economies that we see today. Tiny economies that clearly cannot survive on their own. Tiny economies that should they survive, like black people always do, they're easy to destabilize. And then after they chopped up these little countries, they often say the divisions were so arbitrary that husband and wife were in bed, and when they woke up in the morning, the husband was in Zambia and the wife was in Malawi. And the assignments of these countries to the colonizers were also done in a way that they would provide maximum destruction. I often say, have you ever pictured driving from Zambia? You're speaking English. Pretty soon, you're in Angola. You're speaking Portuguese. A little north, you're in DRC. You're speaking French. Go a little west, you're in Equatorial Guinea. You're speaking Spanish. A little further north, you're in southern Cameroon. You're speaking English. Keep going north. Now you're in northern Cameroon. You're speaking French. A little west, now you're in Nigeria. You're speaking English. You see, give it a couple of generations, people who were once one will not know each other because they now speak a different language. They now have borders. They now have a different flag. And each one with their own anthem. People who were once one, completely divided up. It was all by design. Then they take those little economies and gave them the same sovereignty on the world stage as the big boys. How do you take Central African Republic and put Central African Republic on the same stage with China and say negotiate. How do you take Malawi and put Malawi in the same room across from India and say negotiate? How do you take Djibouti and put them in the same room with the United States and say negotiate? Africans are defeated before the game even begins. I often use an example of taking my poor husband, if you knew him, and put him in the same boxing ring with Mike Tyson. He said, my husband will collapse before he even gets on the stage. And when he collapses, it's like, what's wrong with you, Dr. Carl? Can't you fight Mike Tyson? The world is not fair. So when we find ourselves being thrown, oh, African leaders are corrupt. Oh, that's a big one. They will hit you with that every time. And every time it's supposed to be a conversation stopper about Africa. You see, after they divided us up into the tiny little economies that we are today, then between 1958 and 1961, they started giving us quote-unquote independence. France did something absolutely deplorable. Made the former, and I'm going to use the word former loosely, French colonies, because they still are colonized, sign a document which they called the Pact for the Continuation of Colonization. Dig this. On one hand, we're giving you your independence. But on the other hand, sign this document that you are agreeing to continue to be colonized. So two countries said, no way, Jose, we ain't doing this, Guinea and Mali. The French could not understand it. How could an African country dare not want to be affiliated with France? So in their anger, history tells us that they went into those two countries, took everything that they thought they had brought. To hear Mugabe put it, they even took the last teaspoon and the last chair, proceeded to pour concrete into the sewage pipes, completely devastating the two economies. This was also done as a way of letting the other countries know that should you refuse to sign this document, this is the fate that awaits you. So the rest of the country signed. Fast forward, 2019, the Pact for the Continuation of Colonization remains in place. What is special about this? The Pact for the Continuation of Colonization said, one, you Africans, you do not know how to manage your money. You shall deposit 85% of your bank reserves with the French Central Bank under the control of the French Minister of Finance. The French government will take all your monies, collectively invest your monies in the French stock market under the French name. And you don't have to know what the returns are. Should you wish to access some of your money, keep in mind that countries are now left with only 15% of their reserves. You have to submit your country's financial report. And if approved, you get to access up to 20% of your deposits from the previous year as a loan at commercial interest rates. I'm going to repeat that. Should you want to access some of your own money, you have to submit your own country's financial report. And if approved, you get it as a loan at commercial interest rate. So you go from having a humongous credit with France to now owing France for borrowing your own money, a loan that you'll never be able to finish paying. They also said, all your minerals discovered and yet to be discovered, French companies have the first right of refusal. You go to those countries today, all major contracts, French companies have the first right of refusal. The water supply, the power supply, the mining fixtures, the oil rigs, road construction, airports, French companies have the first right of refusal. If anything is left, the people in your country may get it. They also said, your military can only be trained by France. You can only purchase military equipment from France. France shall have military presence in your country and can invade your country without notice if France feels that her interests in your country are being violated. What constitutes a violation? If you decide to pull from the pact. Keep in mind, as part of the financial situation, France also created a special currency just for West African countries and Central African countries that is called a CFA. And that France is the only country that can print your money. So a violation would constitute an African leader saying, I no longer want my money printed by France. I'm going to start printing my own money. That's a violation, and it can call for France invading your country. In the past many years, we've had 67 coups in Africa out of 26 countries. Of the 26 countries, the coups, 16 coups, were 16 countries were former French colonies. To date, 22 African leaders were assassinated during a coup, documented all of them. France was behind it, simply because France felt they were quote-unquote threatening French interests by wanting to pull out of this horrible, horrible pact. 2019, nothing has changed. Countries are still depositing their funds to France. French companies still have first right of refusal. So if you are an African president, newly appointed, your first day in office, your chief of staff comes to you and reads to you the do's and don'ts as stipulated by the Pact for the Continuation of Colonization. Mr. President, you have given up your financial resources. You have given up control of your natural resources. You have given up your military. What power do you have? May I take you back to the question? When people start the conversation with corruption in Africa, I give it to you. I'm not disagreeing. We have corruption in Africa, but who doesn't have corruption on earth? Which country, which continent, which region is free of corruption? And yet what happens in Africa, so much light is shone on it, and when the same thing happens elsewhere, it's minimized. You see, I liken to today, because of the Pact for the Continuation of Colonization, France alone, that little bitty country, is taking out of Africa over $500 billion. Over $500 billion. And by the time they finish investing that money into the French stock market, they are realizing trillions of dollars in any given year. Pack that. The watchdogs for corruption are saying out of Africa, 50 billion gets out of the continent from corruption. Now you got two thieves. You have a thief with a briefcase with 50 billion and another thief, a small thief, with a briefcase with 500 billion. Which thief are you going to go after? The world wants you to be stuck with a thief with 50 billion. and not the safe with $500 billion that's going to become trillions of dollars. Do you quickly realize how the $50 billion becomes a crumb under the table? And we are meant to fight each other for which one of the brothers has gotten a larger chunk under the table. So that way we never have to get on the table and talk about not a 3-course meal, not a 5-course meal, not a 10-course meal. I call it a 100-course meal going on the table. The question I have is, why has it been so difficult for us as Africans to say enough is enough? How long are we going to keep watching this carnage go on and we say nothing? It goes back to the mind. It goes back to that fear. It goes back to that sense of inferiority. And I go back to the diagnosis I made when I went to Washington, that until we black people understand that we are suffering from the legacy of colonization, that we are suffering from the legacy of slavery, that while we may have lost the shackles of the in our legs and our hands, the shackles of the mind continue. Until we realize that we are a wounded people and we need healing, nothing about our circumstances is going to change. We are sick people. But to be sick, first you must realize and accept that you're sick. How do you go to the doctor if you don't think you're sick? We are not only in the doctor's waiting room on outpatient basis. We are not even in the hospital in a general ward. As black people, we are in the intensive care. And we need to realize that. United Nations. It is a body that's supposed to be the watchdog for human rights violations. France is on the UN Security Council. And you see me pick up on France. There are other colonizers too, who are still colonizing Africa. But France did something extraordinary through this pact. We're talking cold, hard cash out of Africa. That we must stop. And immediately, we must do that. So France remains as a member of the UN Security Council. And yet France today remains one of the biggest perpetrators of human rights violations in Africa. And everybody is giving it, the world is giving it a blind eye. France remains the biggest risk to peace and security in Africa today. And nobody is talking about it. So I decided that if I am going to deliver on my mandate as the African Union representative to the United States, our people must know the truth and nothing but the truth. That no more shall we continue to be fed lies or be fed information that the powers that be feel we must know and stop there. We will know the truth. And so it is. My first video was addressed to the African diaspora to precisely put things in perspective. Starting with the Berlin Conference, the Pact for the Continuation of Colonization. 1963, when our Pan-African leaders got together in an effort to undo the Berlin Conference, but they failed. Because when they went to Addis Ababa at the invitation of Emperor Haile Selassie, they were divided. We had the Pan-African group that said, Africa for the Africans, African Union now. There were only 7 countries. Ghana, Guinea, Mali, Egypt, Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. The rest were the nationalists, the Monrovia group. They said, let's go slow. So it is, they won. We often say Africa lost when the Pan-African group, the Casablanca group, lost. Year in, year out, The leaders came up with a compromise which they called the Organization of African Unity. They meet twice a year to discuss issues pivotal to the continent. The issue of an Africa speaking with one voice was tabled at every summit. And year in and year out, they failed to reach consensus until March of last year, 2018, when we finally agreed on what we are now calling the African Continental Free Trade Area, where Africa is now saying enough is enough. Africa must speak with one voice. That's the only way for Africa to take her place on the world stage is when Africa enters the world stage as one giant Africa. So it is July this year, the African heads of state officially launched the African Continental Free Trade Area. And beginning July next year, Africa, the sleeping giant, will enter the world stage as one customs union. It's been a long journey. I call it a 700-year courtship, and that goes back to when the colonizers first came to Africa. I'm calling it a 56-year pregnancy. That's when our Pan-African leaders met in 1963 and started the conversation about a united Africa speaking with one voice. The baby is now born, and her name is the African Continental Free Trade Area. You see, the children of Africa must realize that now we need diapers, we need formula, they're going to be sleepless nights, this baby is going to cry, this baby is going to throw tantrums. We need to be ready to take care of this baby. And the only way to effectively take care of this baby is when the children of Africa are walking and get rid of the shackles of the mind. Because if we do not wake up as a race, if we do not realize that we are suffering from this affliction, if we do not seek the help that we need and the healing that we must have, guess what's going to happen come July? You see, well, you got to understand what the African Continental Free Trade Area is doing. The African Continental Free Trade Area is creating an economy that's $3 trillion with a workforce intra-Africa of 1.27 billion. An environment that you can spread and grow your business like wildfire from one country to the other. The borders that have kept us from trading with each other as African countries are in the process of being melted as we speak. Beginning July 9 next year, 90% of all goods being traded within Africa are going to be zero duty. We're looking at quadrupling intra-Africa trade in the next 5 years. Africa is on the move. The question is, are the children of Africa ready to step up and take what is rightfully yours? You got to understand, around the globe, as black people, the reason we are so disrespected is because we are poor. Most of us don't own anything. Singularly, while we were given our independence, the one thing that was denied from us is economic liberation. The African heads of state are saying, African wealth belongs to the African children. The African Union defines African diaspora as all people of African descent living outside Africa. The African Union is calling on its children to come home and for a change, build the Africa that you want. The colonizers have been building the Africa that they want. The game is up. You see, you don't go to China and find black people driving the Chinese development agenda. You don't go to Europe, you don't go to Mexico, India, and find black people driving those regions' development agenda. The reality is, you must not, cannot, should not, and golly, will not go to Africa and find non-Africans driving the African continental development agenda. Unless, of course, you, the children of Africa, the inheritors of Africa's wealth, choose to vacate that place that has your name. The choice is yours. The environment is ready. And so, I'm on a mission to see to it that we, people of African descent, truly understand our Africa. Truly realize that we have been lied to, but that we're smart enough to know better. That we have been sleeping, that it's time to wake up. You see, a united African diaspora is a sleeping giant. It is the sleeping giant that is needed to bring the sustainable change that Africa desires.
I just want to say that here at Albany State, we strongly believe that education is the vaccine to poverty. And so we stand with you, we stand alongside you, and we support your mission and your fight. Please accept this as a small token of our appreciation. Thank you.
Actually, one other point that I started discussing with the provost, the Association of African Universities now have their offices in Washington, D.C. It's an association that represents 400 universities across the continent. With a one-stop shop, you can pretty much pick where you want to go in Africa. I would hope that I told the provost that I will bring them back. The enrollment, we must expand the international study program, not only for students but also for professors. This can be done very easily, and I'm on a mission. I will work with the professor to see to it that next year we have as many of you students going to Africa. We want to establish... It should not be expensive. You see, white schools are very good at taking care of themselves. One of my kids speaks French like a Frenchman, sadly, because of the program that she was in. All we paid for was the airline ticket. Even the professors, I housed three professors every year from France as part of the exchange program. We can do this. We need to establish host parents. We need to establish host parents in Africa and here. The schools must commit to accommodation. There are organizations that when we work together, our students should never have to struggle. There are airlines that are making money out of going to Africa. Let's hold them accountable. There are businesses making money in Africa. Let's hold them accountable. There are many. There are very different ways that we can see to it that our children get to where they want to go. I want to give you my word. I am going to fight to see that our children go to Africa. And Provost, you have my word. Assistant, you have my word. We are going to Africa next year. Plain and simple. Thank you.
My name is Sam Hart, and I'm the Director General of the Abia State Marketing and Quality Management Agency. At the onset of the global COVID-19 pandemic, the Governor of Abia State, Dr. Okezie Victor Ekpeazu, gave a charge to our Abia tailors and artisans to rise up and meet the global shortage in face masks and other PPEs. I am proud to announce to you that Abia tailors and artisans have been able to produce over 1 million face masks, which has been distributed around Nigeria. ABA has the capacity to bridge the global shortage in PPE, nose masks and other medical essentials, and we are here for you. You can reach us on phone number 0817-777-1306.
Hello. Hello everyone, welcome to today's episode of the OSASA Show. In today's program we have the former African Union representative to the United States, Ambassador Arikana Chihombori-Kwau. She will be speaking to us about how Africa can reposition itself post-COVID-19. Don't go anywhere, it promises to be a very enlightening interview. Welcome back to the OSASA Show. Joining me now is Her Excellency Ambassador Arikana Chihombori-Kwau. Welcome to today's program, Your Excellency.
Thank you for having me, my dear.
You're most welcome. First of all, I must commend you and thank you for the relentless effort you have put in speaking for Africans world over. You popularly spoke about the French continuous colonization of African countries, particularly in West and Central Africa. This led to the stopping of the CFA franc being used in most of these countries. In December of 2019, these 8 countries adopted the ECO currency. However, critics have still claimed that France still has its tutelage on these African countries because the ECO is still backed by the euro, and France is also making sure that there are also the people standing in for the currency. What do you have to say about that?
Well, what I can say is thank you for having me, my dear doctor. I appreciate all the work that you're doing to continue the conversation. Really, we're at a critical time in the history of Africa, and it is your world. You, the youth of Africa, this is your world. Our job as your elders, we know we have messed up this Africa for you, but we would like to fix it and make it right. If we can't finish the job, at least when we leave this earth, we want to be able to say to you children, this is what we have done. There was a problem in our village, and this is where you need to pick up. Going to the issue of the ECO with France, what is needed is complete separation. What President Macron is suggesting to have an ECO that is going to be pegged to the euro is totally unacceptable. To have an ECO that when leaders of the African countries want to trade, all the trade have got to go through the French central bank and then pass on whichever country is wishing to trade with those former French colonies. That is also unacceptable. What is needed is complete separation. African leaders are quite capable of handling their own affairs. African countries, especially ECOWAS, they're quite capable of handling their own currency. They're already having discussions. The heads of state are having their own discussions. They have set up their own parameters as to what it's going to take for them to be ready to have their own single West African currency. France just needs to stop interfering. This is a program for the African heads of state in West Africa. So for France to run in and think they can just steal the program away from the African heads of state, it's not going to happen. Ghana has already let them know. Nigeria has already let them know. So this is not going to happen. They can try to play games again, but we need to let President Macron know that we're not stupid. We know exactly what game he's playing. It's not going to work. The youth of Africa, the children of Africa, we may have been asleep for far too long, but President Macron needs to know once and for all that the children of Africa are waking up. Enough is enough. The games that they have played with us over the centuries, those games are over. They need to realize that this is a new game. They need to strategize because the Africans are not going to take it anymore. So those games of trying to put in this puppet euro, renamed ECO, is not going to work.
Ambassador, should we at least pat ourselves on the back? The fact that you clearly advocated that the representative of France sitting on the board of the West African Central Bank should be removed, and it was that representative was removed. Should we at least pat ourselves on the back for the fact that you also advocated that their currency, this CFA, should be changed, and it was changed? Should we pat ourselves on the back for this achievement, or is there still so much more that we need to fight for?
No, we are not ready to pat ourselves on the back yet. A lot more work is yet to be done. You got to understand that France is going to be a tough nut to crack. Uprooting France out of Africa, period, is going to be a tall order. Let's make no mistake about that. For France, getting out of Africa is a do or die. For them, without Africa, France is a worse than a third world country. So we know that. What is needed from France is to treat Africa fairly. Come to the table and treat the Africans fairly. Africa is a huge continent. Africa could feed all of China, all of India, all of Europe. We could even house the citizens of those countries. That's how humongous and that's how rich the African continent is. We are simply asking that those who engage Africa from outside Africa come to Africa with your suitcases chock full of humility, honor, and respect for the Africans. We will roll out the red carpet for you. But continued exploitation of the continent is no longer going to be tolerated. And for those who have gotten away with it for centuries, we want to send a message that is loud and clear that enough is enough. The game is over. Come to Africa and treat the Africans fairly. All we are asking is that they treat Africa and her children fairly, with respect, and do what is right and do what is just. Do what you would want done for your own children in Europe, or wherever you are coming from. The little girls and the little boys in France, whatever their needs are also the needs of the little girls and little boys in Africa. We are not going to sit around anymore and watch our children starving to death. We are not going to sit around anymore and watch our women die while giving birth to another life. That time is over now. We can no longer play politics. We can no longer play diplomacy. How do we have a diplomatic conversation with a master who has never left? We are under the table while the master is sitting on the table in our house, eating our food that we would have served him. And then from under the table, the master is dictating that we should have a diplomatic conversation while he is on the table and we are under the table. That is not a conversation that can be diplomatic. In fact, we should be beating up France. We should have been beating up France a long time ago. And yet we're still under the table and begging for them to drop a few crumbs. And while we are under the table, they're telling us how we should organize ourselves in order to divide the few crumbs. No, France needs to know once and for all that what needs to happen is that France needs to come to the table as an equal partner. We are more than happy to negotiate with France as an equal partner. And France must understand Africa is big enough. There's enough for all of us. There's no need for the French companies to be so greedy. There's no need for France to be so greedy. Africa is big enough, and our hearts as Africans are big enough that we are ready to welcome the world. But they must come to Africa with respect for the Africans, just like we go to their countries with respect for their people. We are not asking them for anything that they would not ask of us when we come to their countries.
Exactly,
we are demanding respect.
Yes.
You come to Africa, you better respect the African.
Most
and
definitely.
That is all we are asking.
Yes, permit me to interject. I think one of the most shocking data that you released during one of your conversations was the fact that 50% of the reserves in these West African countries were domiciled in France. But during this recent meeting with the heads of state and President Macron, he said that that would no longer happen, that all the money in the West African and Central African central banks will remain as is. Is that enough, or is there more we need to do in preserving Africa's wealth for Africans in particular?
Well, what I would like to see is the action speaks louder than words. He made that proclamation. I have not heard anything yet that is saying the heads of state are no longer required to deposit their reserves. with the Central Bank of France. So if you have more information on that, please enlighten me. It's one thing to make that proclamation, it's another thing to actually actualize it. Until I see it in writing, until I know that the heads of state are no longer depositing their finances, their financial reserves with France, it's just words coming from President Macron. We must actualize his words.
We cannot overemphasize the importance of good leadership. Because women like yourself held this sensitive position of African Union's permanent representative to the U.S., you use this platform to shine light on critical issues such as this. The world, even those of us living here in Africa, on the continent, in Nigeria, did not know this was going on in our neighboring countries. But you used your position to shine light on this very sensitive issue. So you can definitely agree with me that leadership is very important. What can African leaders do at this point, given the global pandemic, the COVID-19 has affected economies, it's affected the way we interact socially. What can African leaders do now to reposition itself from a place of strength, from a place of power, to ensure that our continent thrives once and for all, and we don't just pay lip service to the fact that, yes, we're rich in natural resources, yes, we're a blessed continent, but we start to exemplify these blessings given to us?
Well, first of all, I'm constantly reminding everybody to go back to the Berlin Conference. If we understand why they met in Berlin, it's easy to understand where Africa is today. If we understand what happened in 1884, from November 1884 to February of 1885, we will understand why we are today. If we also understand what took place during those 4 months, it will also disgust us to say 136 years later, a strategy that was put in place to keep us forever defeated and dominated remains in place today. And we actually simply have completely forgotten about it. We have normalized it. We have accepted it. Berlin Conference intentionally broke us up into the tiny little economies that cannot survive on their own. Let me reiterate what I've always said. How can Togo negotiate with the European Union? How does Djibouti negotiate with China? How does Central African Republic negotiate with the United States? We must learn something from the United States. United States understood that as Delaware, the state of Delaware, cannot survive, as the state of Illinois alone cannot survive, California, even California and Texas, the biggest states in the United States, they knew their strength was in the numbers and in their unity. So they came together and created the United States of America. Africa should be a continent that needs to grow up to be like the United States. We must come together and be the Africa that we were before the Berlin Conference. Berlin Conference was a strategy designed to see to it that we will forever be chasing our tails as tiny little economies. We must come together. That is why our Pan-African Fathers met in 1963, precisely to put together, to rebuild that which was destroyed by the colonizers, by breaking us up during the Berlin Conference. Sadly, they did not succeed. It took us 56 years since 1963 to finally come up with what we are now calling the African Continental Free Trade Area, which was signed in 2018 by the African heads of state. Implementation of that decision was supposed to be in July. Thanks to COVID, it's been pushed back to January. When we come together as Africa, when we go to the negotiating table, as Africa, the continent, we are a powerhouse. We are a heavyweight. And we belong on the world stage with other heavyweight boxers. But to honestly think that Togo can go to the world market as Togo, that is ridiculous, it is laughable, and it is unbelievable that for 135 years we have allowed this stupidity to go on. How does Djibouti go to the world stage and claim sovereignty, standing next to the United States, standing next to China, standing next to the European Union, standing next to India. Djibouti is going to be swallowed. It is just that simple. And we Africans sit back and complain about why Djibouti is not doing this, why Togo is not doing this, why Malawi is not doing this. These are little boys being forced, being thrown in the heavyweight boxing ring every day. Let's understand our Africa from the root. Let's not be forced to complain about the leaves of this tree and the flowers of this tree, which are going to come and go one season after the other, and completely disregard the root causes of why Africa is where it is today. So to answer your question, what Africa needs is unity, is an Africa speaking with one voice. None of the former French colonies can fight France on their own. It's only when they come together as West Africa, when Africans come together as Central Africa, but even better, when we come together as the continent, can we take a position and push back in a manner that we can actually succeed. Now, I have to say, my young daughter, that time is around the corner, because the African youth are waking up. The Africans are saying enough is enough. We've been asleep for far too long. We are waking up from our slumber of centuries. Yes, granted, we were systematically put there. We were systematically brainwashed. But the game is up, and the Western world and now the Eastern world, they must also wake up and smell the coffee. That they can no longer continue this game with the old rules. It is a new game that is calling for new rules of engagement. We are open. We are Africans. We have a huge heart. This is who we are. And we are ready to accommodate anybody that's going to come to us with respect. That is all we are asking. We are asking that they respect us. We are asking that they treat us fairly. These unfair trade policies can no longer be tolerated. So my hope is, come January next year, we can officially implement the African Continental Free Trade Area. So our Africa, united, can go to the world stage as one customs union. Now we are talking of a superpower. Now we are talking of a powerhouse. United, nobody can mess with us. So that is the answer. That is the solution to Africa's problems. But to try and deal with these issues on a national level, it's never going to work. We are forever going to be chasing our tails, which is precisely where they want us to be. And they have succeeded. So to those who contrived the Berlin Conference, I say to you from your grave, wherever you are, congratulations. Job well done. 135 years later, the children of Africa are still chasing. We are still chasing our tails.
Ambassador Aritana, understanding the root cause to any problem is one step towards fixing it. So I thank you so much for clearly elucidating and explaining the root cause of Africa's problems. But would you also consider the lack of capable leadership as an endemic issue across Africa? We talk about the issue of corruption across African leaders. We talk about the issue of ineptitude, the issue of basic education for even most of these leaders. You hear the conversations that most of these leaders have and you wonder, are they even educated enough to hold this position of power? So what is the solution, homegrown solutions that we as Africans can take to pick the right leaders? Because we see a lot of thugging and violence during the elections, and anybody who has the money, the financial capacity, just assumes that power of leadership without having the requisite knowledge and self-composure to actually attain that level of power. So what can we do as Africans, African youths, people passionate about this continent, to elect the right leaders? We understand that the root cause has been decided over 135 years ago, but what can we do as a people to change the course of things to ensure that we have capable men and women at the helm of affairs to lead this continent forward?
Let me give you an example, my daughter, of you and I on a journey and a few of your friends, and we're lost in the forest. And in our way, in our efforts to go home, we pick up the wrong lane. Instead of going east, we are going west. It doesn't matter how much strategizing we do. We are on a losing path. We are not going home until we find our way and turn around and be on the right path going east. That is the only way we are going to go home. Through the Berlin Conference and through the policies they put in place when we got our independence in the late 50s and early 60s, where they intentionally kept the economic liberation from us, gave us limited political liberation. And I'm saying limited because they still continue to control the politics of the land through their various conniving means. We are not in control of our destiny. It's like you and I, my daughter, like I said, we are trying to go home. We are lost in the forest. We are going west when we should be going east. First and foremost, Africa must be on the right path. You can win all the fights you want to win. If you are on a losing path, you are still going down. You can win all the fights you want. You're going riding in a derailing train. You're still going to go down. What Africa needs, I am not saying we do not have problems with corruption. Don't get me wrong. Corruption is a serious problem, and we must address it vigorously. However, when I look at the issues of leadership, if I were to simplify the conversation and say, let's talk about our issues as from scale of 1 to 10, I would put leadership around 5, 6. Why? Until France can leave the $500 billion on the continent, until all the other colonizers can stop extracting all these minerals out of Africa to the tune of billions, until illicit funds are stopped from getting out of Africa, until the looting of the illegal mining, the trade in plants and wildlife, all these illegal activities that are taking out of Africa trillions of dollars combined, they want us to not talk about it. And another big one are those safe havens from all the multinationals who are working in Africa. They have existed, majority of them, even prior to independence. They do not pay taxes. The average African on the street is paying taxes. These multinational corporations are not paying taxes using these safe havens. Again, billions of dollars are getting out of Africa. Allow me to put things in perspective. When you put all this corruption from outside together, you are talking trillions of dollars getting out of Africa that we are being told not to talk about. They have done a great job at making sure that the Africans don't understand the intricacies of what they are doing, the games that they are playing. All they want us to force us to believe is that corruption is your only problem, that leadership is your only problem. No, on a scale of 1 to 10, yes, leadership is an issue. In some cases, not all. Let me make that clear. Let's not paint Africa with one blanket, one brush. No, there are many African heads of states who are doing very well for their people. We cannot just blame it all on corruption. All of Africa is corrupt. That is wrong, and we must refuse it and deny it and call it out. If you want to talk about a corrupt situation in a particular country, then talk about that particular situation. But don't take that one particular situation and extrapolate it throughout the continent. That is wrong, and we will not accept it.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Arikana Chihombori-Kwau, for your time. I truly appreciate it. Women like yourself are an inspiration to young people across the continent like me who look up to you, your boldness, your eloquence, and your passion for the African continent. Thank you so much for your time. That's it for today's program. Don't forget to follow us on social media, Ask Yourself the Show, at POS TV Network, Ask Yourself.